Earlier, I was looking at Lauren Coleman's CryptoMundo website, CryptoMundo.com, looking at some Bigfoot Loch Ness Monster stories, and I came across an incredible Bigfoot story, and we're going to share it in just a moment with two filmmakers and documentary experts, John Johnson and M.K. Davis. Both of them are next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie. This hour, we're going to talk about an incredible documentary called Keeping the Watch. And here we go. Filmmaker and documentary expert John Johnson has worked in all aspects of freelance photography and videography. John became involved in cryptid projects by accident, having produced and released three documentary films, Keeping the Watch, Spotlight on the Patterson-Gimlin film, and the M.K. Davis theory, and Hunt the Dogman. John and his work with N.P. Davis present an interesting theory on the creature that we all know is Bigfoot. Here he is, first of all, John Johnson. Hey, John, how are you?
I'm fine, George. Thanks for having us.
Thank you, and thanks for this great work that you two have done. Filmmaker M.K. Davis developed an interest in the Patterson-Gimlin Bigfoot film while pursuing astrophotography. Now, that happens to be a discipline of taking space photographs through a telescope. M.K. began his 10-year effort and has now participated also in various expeditions around the country. Here is M.K. Davis. Hey, M.K., how are you?
Hey, George, how are you? Thanks for having me on today.
Oh, me too. We've got both of you on the line, so we'll keep this dialogue going. We'll take some phone calls a little bit later this hour. John, tell me a little bit about your relationship with M.K. How did that all start, first of all?
Well, like I said, it was an accidental thing getting into the whole cryptid thing. After I decided which road to take on the first documentary, after I retired, I started doing some polling in various groups around the country and decided on a short list of people, and M.K. was definitely on that. I had seen M.K. And met him briefly at a conference in Conroe, Texas. And the thing that I had really had a great interest in at the time was the software and his methods of stabilization on the Patterson film, because those of you who've seen it know that this thing jumps all over the frame if it's unstabilized. But the thing that I saw was an amazing full frame rendition where you could actually see the frame borders. And this thing walked across my computer screen from left to right with the creature dead center, and all of the movement had been transferred to the edges of those images, and it was just fascinating. So at the time, I was absolutely convinced that the Patterson-Gimlin film was a hoax, but I was very interested in meeting the man and discussing with him the type of software. Well, I got a surprise on both ends because after meeting M.K. and going through some of the basic, some of the basic enhancements he had done and watching him use the software, which, by the way, is just an off-the-shelf animation program for GIF images. It's very labor-intensive. I was very impressed, and he agreed to be part of my first film effort, Keeping the Watch, which profiled six people who were into the Bigfoot theory.
You know, John, all around this planet, people have been looking for Bigfoot, Sasquatch, the Abominable Snowman, and the work of the two of you now is pretty remarkable. We've got some of the film clips posted up there at the coasttocoastam.com website. M.K., let's talk a little bit about you and your work, because we're going to unravel tonight something very different here, and that's the possibility that Bigfoot might not be as animal as a lot of people think.
Well, yeah. When I first began this project, George, I was prepared to go wherever the evidence pointed me, and I had made up my mind. From my experience in astrophotography and having looked at some of the better images from the film, I knew that somewhere out there was a really good version of this film, because you can't get good prints from a bad film. So that I began to, you know, make some inquiries to try to see if I could locate, you know, some better images from it. And I knew what was wrong with the images, and I knew that by and large it was not in the film stock, but it was in the lensing and that the lensing can be largely corrected, and that if I were to correct it like I knew that I could, and then I were to assemble and stabilize the film, that it may tell us something about whether it was real or whether it was a hoax. And I thought it was a project, you know, well worth doing, so I began to do that. And it's been now into my 11th year, well into my 11th year, so it's been very surprising the direction that it's gone. You know, if I had seen a zipper or anything like that, I would have announced it to the world, but I'm afraid that this thing right here is going to go down in history as genuine.
And what is the talk, either one of you can answer this, of the possibility that this creature might have been wounded or shot at? John, now, do you want that? Or MK is?
No, I'll let John comment first. And I'll...
Well, you know, okay. we bantered about a bunch of stuff. There were certain anomalies on the film, and one of the very first that I saw in Texas was this thing that people keep referring to as the hernia. And what it looks like is a herniated muscle, but as MK was to increase his techniques on the enhancement, it became apparent that this animal had suffered some sort of an injury. And I'm going to say animal because I feel kind of odd calling it a woman, but which is exactly what it is. But she had experienced some sort of an injury. Now, the closer he got to that, there were some frames in the film that he had discovered where this creature takes kind of an odd step. You know, it kind of steps over its feet and back and forth and stumbles and then rights itself and proceeds on. Well, we started putting two and two together, and almost immediately we have a couple other people involved in this thing. One here in Florida with me, and some people out on the West Coast with MK,
okay,
that were convinced, and we pretty much concluded all at once that this looks like there may have been a gunshot wound. The more you look at it, it does appear to be an exit wound, and there does appear to be another one appear just above it. As the animal is walking, it's quite compelling. Now, I've got to qualify this with the fact that the biggest criticism that MK receives is the fact that people are absolutely convinced that he is over enhancing, he is over magnifying this film, and I'll use the same example that as I will I do to everybody, and that is if anybody has ever sat in a movie theater and watched a standard feature film, you're looking at a piece of film projected on that screen that is a mere 22 millimeters across. That's what the 35 millimeter frame run vertically through those film cameras yields in those horizontal frames. When you run the stock vertically, you get a horizontal frame because it is a left-to-right or a horizontal format. It's 22 millimeters across, yet you can project that onto a screen the size of around 100 feet for outdoor venues and still see the film. So it's really a moot point. He's not over-enhancing or over-magnifying the film. And that Kodachrome 25 film stock is the absolute, that's the best film stock at the time, and certainly remains one. It's got more than a million grains per square inch, and it's finer than even the very finest digital photography can offer. So you do start to see some granularity in MK's work, but I'll tell you, when you see a piece of film, some sort of debris or something, it looks like a boulder in there. There's no mistaking that what he's seeing is on the film. Right. Has been recorded right. On the film, and it's
already
not
there.
Film grain or noise or dirt or anything like that. So it's very, very compelling stuff.
MK, your assessment, what do you think?
Yeah, well, it's like this. The closer you get back to the master, the one that was in the camera the day he took the film, the better it gets. Kodachrome 2 is theater grade. You could plaster the image of Bigfoot all the way across your barn. And I doubt you'd see a grain. It's that good. So I knew from my experience that if I got back to that master, that the film would tell its own story. If your listeners will click on the link there, that's right under our name on the homepage that says related images.
Okay.
You can see that we've been discussing there on Bigfoot Central program and artistfirst.com last night. We were discussing some new findings on the film. I obtained five frames from the original master that were transferred to a 5-inch 4x5 transparencies, and they are just absolutely fabulous. And if you look at the top one, it says teeth 2-frame. You'll see that the one that says lips is one where I found the lips in 2006 on a second-gen copy when she looked straight at the camera. And then the one that is blinking, too, you see the image gets much smoother. That's the one from the transparency, and you can see that the lips are there as well as the front teeth.
It is definitely a human-like characteristic creature.
Oh, that is no. There's no doubt that they're not the lips of an ape. Now, what I did find very remarkable that once I obtained these transparencies and I got them from Mrs. Patterson, Roger Patterson's widow, I traveled to Yakima where she lives and I visited with her and she allowed me to have those images professionally scanned, and they were scanned there in Yakima at Photo House. So. If that being said, if you'll go down to the next one where it says teeth, no teeth, blink comparison.
Let's go through some of that when we come right back, MK. This is a remarkable story of the search for Bigfoot. I'm George Norrie, back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie with John Johnson, MK Davis. MK, you were talking about the film there and some of the images, and we got hit by the break. Go ahead.
Yeah, well, if you're still there, if the listeners are still there on the page there, the one that says teeth, no teeth comparison, the black and white image there, as opposed to the blue image, the black and white is from the original, those transparencies.
Okay.
And if you'll look, you can see the teeth and the lips, and there's a piece of film debris just beside the front teeth. Whoa. And you can put your cursor right there on that film debris. And if you leave it there, you'll see that when it blinks to the bluer image, you'll see that things change about the mouth. And what has changed, George, is a deliberate attempt to alter the image. The teeth have been completely airbrushed out. This piece of film debris has been airbrushed over and the mouth widened. And then the entire image was masked in blue to prevent anyone from being able to determine the true skin color.
Why would this be done?
Okay. That's a good question. That's a very good question because these are the images that were sold to the American public as a representation of the film. And this is simply not so. What you see there in the black and white, if you go down to the next one, which one? Okay, go down to the one that says teeth only mouth. You can see a real good view of just the teeth where I just worked only on the mouth area.
Mm-hmm.
You see she's got two great big old buck teeth, and they're crooked, and I could pick her out of a lineup. But if you go back up to that blue image, all that's been completely erased, where it says teeth, no teeth, blink comparison, wide. You see the wider field. You see that she's been her skin color has been completely masked, where there's no divergence between the hair and the skin. They're exactly the same tone, so you can't tell where one ends and where one begins. And in my estimation, a deliberate attempt to hide the nature of what's on the film. And that's not to hide the fact that it's a man in a suit. There's simply no way this is a man in the suit. They were trying to hide the fact that it was some sort of human. They made it very ambiguous and ape-like.
And the question is, who did it?
Well, I know where the images came from.
Yes.
They came from Rene DeHinden, a Canadian, who got the rights from Mrs. Patterson in sort of what many people call an underhanded way.
Could they have been altered, though, MK, before she even bought them?
I don't think so. When I looked at these transparencies are in pristine condition, lifted straight off the master, and they show, the face very different looking. They have the original film debris, but if you look at the blue image, you can see where they were unsuccessful in matching the color, and they left a hole on the lip where the film debris is. So they are the ones that's altered.
Okay, before we go to calls, John Johnson, you first. What do you think this creature is?
I think that this creature will be proven one day to be genus Homo with the species unknown. Not Homo sapiens, but possibly Homo erectus or something close to it. I've worked with MK, and I have, as I mentioned to you, I thought originally that this film was a hoax. I was, I'm 58 years old. I was walking through our living room in 1967, that fall, when it first hit the national news, and I stopped at the TV on my way out to do whatever 17-year-olds do.
Yeah.
And I watched this thing, and it repeated two or three times, and I looked at my father, and he started laughing. I said, oh, man in a suit. And then, you know, I left. However, I had no clue that I would be so intimately involved with this. But when I saw MK's work over time, he completely turned a hardened skeptic into a believer of what's on that film. It is quite compelling.
And MK, what do you think? What is this creature?
Well, I dare... You know, very seldomly dare to go into the realm of opinion. I usually stay with what's on the film itself, and I look at each frame as a photograph, as a compilation of data. But for this special occasion, I will say what I think, and it's based upon 10 years, almost 11 years worth of looking into it, that this is a human being, but certainly not your average human being. I don't know exactly, you know, what existed out there in ancient times, but I can't help but believe that what we're looking at is something from days gone by, a vestigial human being. That's all I can say. You know, I'm just floored by the quality of this film when you get near the master, and I have the very best images there are from this film. And let me say categorically, there isn't a chance of this being anything but authentic.
Maybe a missing link, this creature?
I don't know. It's obviously not totally missing.
No, not
Somebody
anymore.
Was able to film it.
Not anymore. That's true.
Yeah,
it was.
She everything on it, you see 10,000 things occurring at once. And as a body, as a complete body of data, everything just screams authentic. The skin color is actually very, very light colored. If you go to that image of the leg that shows the hole, it's listed as creek hole in leg. You kind of get an idea of what's underneath there, the hair. The
right.
hair is reddish, and the skin color is rather tan. And then you see that little hole there, you know, that gives you it's rather tan, too. And that's where we think probably that a ballistic strike, if it occurred right there.
I got to tell you, it is remarkable. Let's take some phone calls. We'll go east of the Rockies, Elaine in Texas. You're on with us. Hey, Elaine.
Hi, guys. Hi, gentlemen. It's nice to talk with you. I just wanted to share a little thing that's going on with me down here. I live in the forest. And in September, it was September 17th, 2007, I had a face-to-face encounter with a big creature. And I know it was Bigfoot because I listen to Coast. I know what he is. I know all about him. And he was just there in the bushes. I heard something, and my son and I went out. And he was hiding in the grass, and we shined the light above him, and my son went to the front of the house, and I was standing there in the dark against my pickup, and he just started rising up out of the grass, and he looked at me, and I've never been so scared in all my life. I couldn't say anything. I was just like, oh, my gosh. It was like this, you know, and I couldn't move. I couldn't scream. Couldn't do nothing. And he was huge. It was a light color. It was at night. And I'm a night person, and I have a rabbit barn, and I go in and out all night in my rabbit barn. And I started looking around my place, and I feel like he had known this place before I moved in it. And I'm a single woman, and I have a son with me. And I think he was watching this house and watching me.
I don't think, and John, you jump in here. Have there been any real reported cases of Bigfoot intentionally trying to hurt somebody?
Not that I'm aware of. Now remember, I'm a filmmaker, and the extent of my research has been incidental with regards to what I do. But I will say that I did although it was unsuccessful for my for inclusion in the first film, I did do a location scouting trip to Texas, to East Texas. And what I saw there, although I didn't see anything particular, I did not have an eyewitness encounter, but what I saw was some very, very strange stuff, enough to make me believe that there are these things are all over the place. Now, whether we can say if it's the same sort of thing that we're finding on the Patterson-Gimlin film, I can't say that. I mean, I can only look at what MK has done with that film, and I can only look at and listen to the things that I did when I started doing research for my films. But something's happening in various parts of the country. My own theory says that it may be we may have something as simple as feral apes and primates running around, but the other side of it is, well, feral apes and primates don't leave footprints 18 or 20 inches long. So very interesting stuff. Where exactly, if the caller's still there, where in Texas are you? Northeast, southwest, where?
I don't know if she's still with us or not.
But okay. I've never heard of anybody being intentionally harmed, but I have heard of people having aggressive encounters.
Can I chime in on that a little bit?
Yeah, and sure can, MK. Sure.
What you see there, if you go to the very bottom of the and see the animated motion image there, take a look at her head there. Her head slopes back like a skateboard ramp. Now, what you see there is not unknown in primitive peoples. The Native Americans were practicing this for hundreds, maybe thousands of years before Europeans ever came here, and that's called a head binding or cradle boarding, where they take a flat device and flatten the forehead back, and, and that's usually reserved for somebody of some importance. That would be the princess or queen or whoever, so somebody important in their tribe or their group. And this is done in infancy when the head is still malleable. So what I'm seeing there is what I take to be a cradle-boarded head. And if that's the case, if you were to stumble across one of these things in the woods and it looks pointy-headed like that right there, remember that if there are others around and they're going to see to it that this person does not get harmed. So if they take you as a threat, you could be in trouble.
Yeah, they will probably gang up on you if they have to.
Yeah, exactly. And there have been occasions when they have ganged up, as in the 1924 Ape Canyon incident up there in the Pacific Northwest, when a miner shot one, and then they came back that night and they tried their best to pry those miners out of that cabin.
Were they successful?
No, but the miners got the heck out of there the next day. They didn't want no more of them. It's just like this. If you're looking at a primitive person there, and I firmly believe that's the case, they still practice primitive things. And these things are known about, and I think people have just forgotten about them. The assumption when you saw the grainy, dark grainy versions was that you were looking at a gorilla crest. But that's not the case at all. When stabilized, that top of the head blows around in the wind. It moves, and bone does not move. She has flowing hair off the back of the head that goes between the shoulder blades that looks every bit like a ponytail when you see the very best images. So This is managed hair, and when you manage your hair, certainly wild animals do not manage their hair by pulling it into a bun or a ponytail. So, you know, there and again, you know, the overwhelming evidence says that this is a human, but make no mistake about it, this is not your average human. This is something that really needs looking into, but there again, you know, you have to accept the film at face value, and it's a heck of a film.
Let's go to our first-time caller line, caller out of Ohio. Go ahead, please.
Yes, sir. What's up, guys? How you doing this evening?
Good. We're well. Thanks.
About 38, 39 years ago, and I don't want to come off one of these yin-yangs from out there that could be out there, but what happened about 38, 39 years ago, in a park south of Dayton, Ohio, and I was 12 or 13 years old when this happened, There was a park south of Dayton, Ohio, by the NCR golf course, near Kettering, which is south of Dayton, Ohio. At any rate, we came upon this creature. There was about four or five of us at different times. This happened over a period of a year and a half, 2 years. We came upon a creature that was about 7 foot tall and hairy, black and hairy, dark brown. Now, there's no lightness to it. It was very dark. And we encountered this creature probably about 30 or 40 times out there in a year and a half time. It had
30 or 40? That's incredible.
Yeah, I've never told anybody about this. It happened, like I said, when I was about 13, 12, 12 and a half, 13. And when I was 15, I lied and went into the service to play the Vietnam War. When I was 15, I lied and just to get into the service. So I was going and never thought about it again until... Funny as it sounds, till tonight I hear you guys talk about the radio. I'm thinking, well, you know, I remember this. We encountered this back when I was 12, 13 years old. And my friends that I encountered with, I don't know where they're at. I've not seen them since then. I mean, they've gone off their lives, and I've gone off mine. And it just kind of brought to my attention when you guys were talking about it. So I thought I'd let you guys know that it happened.
Okay. Well, thanks. Thank you. And again. John and MK, we get stories like this all the time. All the time, people are seeing the strange creature, whatever it may be, from all over the place.
You know, I can't really speak for the rest of the country, and I know that a lot of people see them everywhere. The only thing that I can testify about for sure is that October the 20th, 1967, there was at least one. And you know,
sure.
Where logic takes you from there, you know, it's... Where there's one, there's likely to be others.
There should be.
Yeah.
There should be. Hey, John, where do people get the documentary Keeping the Watch?
Well, you can go to www.grendelfilms.org, which is one word, GRENDELFILMS. And you can purchase it there, or you can go to Amazon.com and put Keeping the Watch in on their search, and it'll take you right to it as well. The film that MK and I did originally, we pulled from release because there were things that were happening with this would be a whole other show, and we don't know at this point what we're going to do with this further information that we're working on, whether we're going to include it in this or not. But I think that MK, it might be a safe bet that we should re-release this. With the interest that this has sparked, I've sold dozens of copies of Keeping the Watch over the last week, and people are asking me for the other. So we're going to need to make a decision on that one. And you can, again, either go to the website or go to Amazon. And Amazon, of course, you pay you can use your credit cards there, and you can do so on my website as long as you have a PayPal account. That's how I manage the stuff on the website.
Well, you know, I think the world of Lorne Coleman, and you know, when he put this up on his website, the story of what you two have been through, we had to have both of you on.
Well, I appreciate you having me on. You take some hits in this business, there's no question about it. and people want instant gratification, and what you're looking at here is a film that was taken 40 years ago that has never been equaled, and then my effort of 11 years to bring out the very best versions of it. So it takes a long time to get to the root of the story, and it's been a story that's been in flux. And it's very difficult to write about. It's very difficult to make documentaries when the story is still evolving. So that's what John was referring to a while ago and releasing the spotlight on the Patterson film, that this new information that has come in has been absolutely incredible. And you don't want to put out something incomplete. So you're looking for that happy ending, you know. So perhaps it's not too far in the future. There's movement on this film finally after 40 years, and I think that eventually this film is going into the record books as authentic film of a legend.
All right. Well, great job, both of you. Thank you so much for being on the program. Again, get up to the coasttocoastam.com website and take a look at the wonderful links here. This is an incredible story.